You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends,
a Q1 Network production.
If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend David Hansen for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I'm so thrilled to have as my guest a very accomplished business person, community leader, wife and mom. She's a trailblazing CEO and business owner in the $210+ billion restoration industry. From Windsor, California, CEO and president of Bravo Restoration and Construction, my guest is Nicole Humber. Nicole, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. Thank you for taking time to join me. It's great to see you, and how are you?
I am fantastic. How are you, Mike?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. I'm one of those guys, I'm just so blessed. Life is so good. I don't deserve it, and I appreciate it when people ask me. And as we were sharing before we started this episode of Mike Seminary and Friends, I shared with you, I was able to run in the rain a lot today. In fact, the whole run was in pretty much a downpour. And I actually was thinking about you and what you do and where you are. And we'll talk a little bit about that, because you're in a part of California, I'm not even sure how many years, 5, 6, 7, 8, I'm not sure. You have fires almost all of the time where you live. Is that correct?
Yeah, since 2017. Well, we've had them a couple times here and there before, but we had a really big loss in 2017. And since then, it's been every year, sometime between August to October is fire season here.
So in a way, that's a blessing and a curse, because for what you do in terms of the restoration industry, you must be awfully busy.
Yeah, actually, it is like a blessing and a curse. I've been evacuated every fire. Last fire, both my shop and my house was evacuated. So that was pretty pretty scary, but we're an essential business. So we still had to be ready to go. We still had homeowners calling us like, okay, can you come in our house now? And I'm like, well, no, like we can't even get into your neighborhood. It's still on fire. And they're like, okay, well, once it's lifted, can you please come in? And so even though I was evacuated and our company was, I had to be ready, prepared to go the second that they were, let us in. And sometimes we were able to get in even before evacuations were lifted. So I do have to say that the 2017 fires is actually what saved my business, believe it or not. So it is a blessing and a curse all at the same time.
Well, let's do some historical perspective, because what you just said is so important. As I've read and learned a fair amount about you, your history, and just how tough and determined you are, by the way. So shortly out of high school, you became a receptionist in a different restoration company. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I was going to school full time at the local junior college because I wanted to be either a cop, a lawyer, or a social worker. I basically just want to give back to those who kind of get screwed over. and sometimes don't have the best industries, a reputation. And I, was working full time, living on my own, and going to school full time. And I landed a job here at a restoration company and just worked my way up. I loved it. I instantly fell in love. I loved what we did. I loved the help, being able to help. I loved the fast pace. It was my calling.
How many years after that, when you first started as the receptionist, and I think you referred to yourself as receptionist chick, by the way, in the interview that I read, how much time from that point in time to where you were introduced, like baptism by fire, that play on words for your industry, by the way, or thirsty woman getting a drink with a fire hose, another appropriate analogy. What was the timeline there?
So from when I started in the industry to when I bought this company, it was, I think, I want to say like 6 or 7 years. Yeah.
And from the first company to when you started at Bravo, how much time was that?
It was only actually a couple months, really, because the first company, I had left after about 2 years with them because they mistreated me when I had my son. And so the guy I worked with at that company, he actually started Bravo. And so I was helping him. I was working for another company full-time, newborn baby, going to school full-time, and helping Bravo kind of get off its feet when it was in the garage of the previous owner's house. And so really just only a couple months in between, I just had to have another job to pay the regular bills. And then I just kind of helped in the background and get this thing off its feet.
So you went from where you had primarily receptionist responsibilities to where you were doing everything. Absolutely, you know, finance, HR, inventory, you were doing everything. Did you immediately love having all of this new responsibility on your shoulders?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the receptionist very long at that company because I just grew so fast. And so I was like, okay, what's the next thing I can do? What else can I learn? I was just a little sponge trying to soak in everything. And so they kept giving me more and more duties. So I kind of pushed myself into that. But I'm a control freak. My birthday is next Tuesday. I'm a Cancer. If I can control everything around me, I will. So I really enjoyed having my hands in everything. Though it is hard, and still to this day, it's still really hard and lots of work, but I really do enjoy it. I love juggling a lot of pieces all at once.
So about 6 years after you're in the industry, you make the decision that you're going to buy the company. Is that the right timeline, about 6 years?
Probably a little bit longer. Like I block out my time. It's like you get older and you feel like it was yesterday, but then you start doing the math and you're like, oh my God, that was like a long time ago. So I'll be 33 next Tuesday. And I started this industry when I was 18 and I bought 5 years ago. So I bought when I was 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. Yeah. So I bought the company when I was 26, started when I was 18. So, I got the opportunity to buy because the previous owner lost his drive, didn't want to run a company anymore. And he said, hey, Nicole, I think you would do a great job. If you can find the money, you can have it. And so I took a second out of my home without even talking to my husband. And granted, I bought this home while I was making $12 an hour. And I'm a very, determined person. So I was determined to buy this company. So I did whatever I had to do. I scrapped and researched and, he told me in January 2016 that he didn't want to own the company anymore, and I was 100% owner by July 1st, 2016.
So 6 months, baptism by fire a second time.
Yes, 100%. And it was my very first day of owning the company. I had 23, 24 employees. Only four of them were female. And one of the project managers, he comes in and I'm all excited, like, oh, day one of being a business owner. This is so cool. I got this. And I said, hey, Ken, where's your paperwork on this? And he just ripped me a new one. He's like, I don't have to effing listen. Like, just went crazy on me and stole my vehicle and drove away like an hour and a half away. That was my first day as a business owner. I had to deal with that.
Is he still with the company?
Oh God, no. Yeah, he got fired right then. I mean, but then I couldn't find him. I was like 4th of July weekend and trying to get cops involved. It was crazy. So that was my very first day as a business owner, getting cursed out by an employee and having them steal your vehicle.
I got to go back to something that you said, because right where you're at, it gets even a little bit more difficult for you. We'll talk about that. I have read a lot about you, by the way. What did your husband say when you finally said, hey, you know what I did today? I took out a second.
He wasn't happy about it. He was, are you kidding me right now? And I low-key may have forged his signature. And he was just like, I said, I have to do this. I need to do this. And he's like, okay, well, when are we going to get our money back? So I don't know. I have no idea. I just have to do this. And we're still together. He did not divorce me. And I've paid it back by now. And he's absolutely, he's awesome. He's a great guy. And so it worked out. It worked out.
He's not a cancer.
No, God, no. He's in that awkward Aries and Taurus. So we really don't get along a lot, but it works.
I'm a Cancer too, by the way. My birthday was last Tuesday.
That's right. 2 weeks apart.
Yeah, last Tuesday.
No, it's this Tuesday.
Yeah, that's what happens when you get really, really old. You forget weeks. It was this Tuesday. Yes, thank you. Yours is next Tuesday.
Yeah, week apart.
So a guy storms out after reading you the riot act, mm-hmm. clearly a chauvinist, takes your vehicle. It still kind of goes downhill from there.
Yeah.
How challenging did it become? Because this is, Nicole, the reason I did the intro the way I did, that the listeners don't hear, I give each program a title. And I closed it with Servant's Heart and Iconoclast. That's a person that smashes idols. The typical, that's just not you. So how difficult did it get?
Well, I had an employee start his own construction company and pull permits under my license and got the Contractor State License Board involved, and they thought it was me doing unethical, bad quality work, so I had to deal with that. We had subcontractors that the previous owner had used. They were not licensed and did not get paid for their work, apparently, because they didn't do a good job, and sued me for as employees. We lost $800,000 in cash that first year, overall that whole year, between that and lawsuits and employee theft. I don't even know how I survived. I missed a couple paychecks of myself. I always paid my staff. I never not paid staff. I had to make embarrassing phone calls to creditors, to subcontractors saying, give me, can I make payments? Can I do this? I hired a lawyer and a consultant when I started, because I was like, okay, 26 years old, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. I got to hire somebody to make sure I'm not totally failing this. And both of them said, what were you thinking buying this company? You're not going to make it, and you need to figure out how to get out of this contract and sell it. And I was like, it's not the answer I was looking for here. I've got to come out with something else. And, I survived, I made it through the year 2016 and barely made it through 2017. And then the Tubbs fire hit, our first fire at the end of 2017. And that saved my business.
Wow. You have some brand damage because of people that were part of the original company. You have experts telling you you're nuts. So, I mean, you have one dream stealer after another saying that your dream is not going to happen and you got to get out of it. And
on top of two little kids at home, where's mom? How come she's not home? A husband at home saying, what the hell did you buy and take all of our money for? And you're not home. And it was insane.
So other than your sheer will and determination, what else kept you moving forward? Was it the fear of failure?
I think it's a combination of the fear of failure. Everything I have had in my life, I've worked really hard for. My childhood, you know, we grew up really, really poor, and we didn't have much at all as kids. And I just want to have. I believe you can have anything you want in life as long as you work hard for it. And so it was a combination of just like I didn't want to fail. I knew I could do it if I just worked hard enough for it, because I believed in myself in that aspect. I believe in the idea that you can achieve and have anything you want in life if you work hard for it. And then also just, I really did care, or I still do obviously, but about my employees. So like these were people that were my coworkers that like we were in the trenches together. And I want to create a place like where everybody just really enjoys working and we all are on the same path and we all, you know, like the whole team thing. I just love that. And I've always wanted to work for a company where, because I was always longevity. I always stayed at my jobs. I mean, I stayed here forever. And I just want to provide a place where like people love what they do and love where they work and have pride. Pride is such a strong emotion. And sometimes it can be conceived as so negative, but it really isn't. Like if you don't have pride, then what the heck are you doing? Like, I don't know. So it was just like a mixture of things. So
Where in your history or family does that string of DNA come from? Because that's really quite a remarkable accomplishment and gift. And the reason I say it that way, Nicole, and I have some experience in business. When you've been around as long as I have, you've been able to experience a lot of things. But you had kids at home, you had your husband, you had this debt, you had dream stealers. You had a bad brand, it had nothing to do with you. You had people that were competing against you, using you, your identity, for all practical purposes. Where did that come from, where you decided that all those things you just said were so important? That's quite remarkable to me.
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know, my mom, I have a weird family dynamic, and I didn't really grow up with my mom, and my dad wasn't always the greatest. And I think it's just a whole like wanting to be better than how it was left. And so I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I should let folks know the way that we came into contact. I had watched Returning the Favor, Mike Rowe's Facebook show that no longer exists. And I was watching it for content that might help me with the types of guests I'm looking for Mike Seminary and Friends. And I watched the episode about Letitia Hanke. And you were part of that episode. So I learned about you, not what I'm learning, you know, since we've initially chatted and I did research and hearing that more now. Also learned about your involvement in the community and the Lyme Foundation. You are an incredibly positive person, and you deal with people, for the most part, in terms of your clients and customers, that have great disruption in their life. They may have lost their home, lost their business, or both. And you're bound and determined to be this beacon of positivity and light. How do you manage your emotions through all of that?
Oh my goodness! You said the buzzword, managing emotions. I don't even know. Another thing I believe in is transparency. So I just am what I am. Like I've cried in front of my staff. I've shown happiness. I've shown anger. Like I don't know. I just fight through it. I acknowledge when I'm upset, or acknowledge when I'm sad, or acknowledge when something's affected me. And I have anxiety and I have all of those normal feelings, and I accept it. And I'm like, okay, this is how I'm feeling right now. Process it. Just let it go through its emotions, but don't hang out in here for too long. Because if I hang out in here for too long, I'm going to start feeling sorry for myself. I'm going to allow it, like, you get what you put out. So if I'm going to put out there like, woe is me, this is so hard, I can't do this, and all this negativity, then I'm just going to get negativity. And that's just, we're going to just be in this vicious, terrible cycle. So I accept it. I'm like, okay, this is crappy and this sucks, but I'll make it through. I still have my life. My children still love me. My husband still likes me. And he loves me, I'm sure. But, you know, I still have the things I know for a fact that mean a lot to me that will never go away, no matter what decision I make here. So I don't know. That just, those emotions, I write them. I let them be there. I don't try to stuff them away because I've tried that and it doesn't work either. But I just don't let myself hang out in those, that negativity for too long, and just look at the most, what's in my control and what positive outcome can I make of this.
Before I start asking you about the fires and the impact and where that took the company, I'll use this because it's public information. It's in the stuff that I read. You were $800,000 in upside down within the first 6 months or year or whatever. And you were dealing with, first of all, stopping the brand damage and then raising it to a new level in terms of positivity. Did you ever think about, I bought a pig in a poke, because everybody told you did, and that should I listen to them and get out, or did you just absolutely said, no, I'm going to keep moving forward? You kind of addressed it earlier, but I wanted to ask again. No, I'm just going to keep moving forward.
I mean, of course I thought about it. Like, even to this day, I'm like, you know, is this a sign? Should I get out? Is this bad? And like I said, with the emotions, I let myself think like that for a second. Like, okay, that's what you think. What's the reality? And the reality is, no, you can do it and move on. So I definitely have thought that, like, you know, I have my own insecurities. I may be positive and confident, but I still have my own insecurities all the time. And so, yeah, those thoughts definitely have crossed my mind. And like, oh my God, what the hell was I thinking? I am an idiot. I shouldn't have done this. And then I just move on from that. Like, that does me no good. It's not an option.
So the fires hit, unfortunately, but it also becomes a silver lining for you. Did that overnight change the trajectory of Bravo Restoration and Construction?
It was, you know, I remember this thought, like, clear as day. I was driving over the overpass, and I was talking to one of my office staff on the phone as I was heading to an inspection. And I said, this fire is either going to make or break Bravo. I said, between our reputation, how we handle it, how we do the quality of work, how we handle insurance, like all of the factors that can make or break the Bravo. I recognize that. I said, okay, this is a huge thing for us. And I don't know if overnight, but definitely within the first month, I saw that, okay, we got this. You know, we developed systems. I developed relationships with other industry professionals that weren't just in my area, but across the California, across the United States. And I actually had one gentleman down in Santa Barbara call me. He's like, okay, Nicole, you have wildfires in your area. I know you've never dealt with this. Do you know what you're doing? And I said, I have no idea what the heck I'm going to do. And he's like, okay, let me walk you through the process. He taught me how to clean houses properly due to wildfire over the phone in an hour and a half. Then I took that to my technician, my supervisor, Luis, who's been with me since the beginning of days. His 10-year anniversary is coming up in January. And then I taught him, and then he taught his crew. And it's like, just like science, there's nothing 100% science. Just like in our industry, we're dealing with science. So we did what he said, and we tested it out, and then we would try things differently. And you know, we went through a whole process and we developed our own way. And every fire, we've gotten better and better. I had this one, we have a really high-end neighborhood right above our facility, like up on the road. And I remember this first homeowner who gave me a shot, and he had, I think it was like a 5,000 square foot home, a multi-million dollar house up in the hills. And he was one of our first clients, and he made me come in. I did the whole estimate. I did smoke. I like Super embarrassing. I even slipped and fell in his tub when I was trying to do smoke sponges to see how far the soot went. And I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to get this project. And he said, hey, I see a lot of negative Yelp reviews. I see, like, I'm seeing your bad reputation from the previous owner and then you taking it over and trying to clean house, but still issues happened. He's like, how can I trust you? And I was like, full transparency. I was like, I no idea. I said, I'm here. I'm right down the street. I will be here this whole time. Here's my cell phone. I can tell you that I won't let you down. And we didn't. And he is so great. Like, he's our number one fan. He still follows us. He tells everybody about us. But if he didn't give me that chance and give me that confidence that I can do that, like, I don't even know if, like, how well we would have done. But he believed in me and believed in us. And from then on, it was like, we got this. We can do anything. Like, even COVID, like, when that hit us, like, we do anything. Nothing can stop us. So it was cool.
I'm going to ask a two-part question. One, I'm assuming that the majority of your competitors are guys. The people that own the companies, run the companies, they're guys.
100%, yes.
And that when the fires came, you also probably needed to find more talent because of the work that would come the door. So how did Nicole, who's probably dealing with some real interesting sexual comments and defeatist kind of things, get over that and then find the talent at the same time to take advantage of this opportunity to help people while their lives are so disrupted at their homes or businesses?
Honestly, it was a combination of, like, one, I don't worry about my competitors too much because I truly believe everybody has their own success and, like, recognize competitors, but don't let them consume you because it's just poison. You can only worry about what you can control. And second was my staff. Like Luis, I mentioned him earlier. We got a lot of team members from word of mouth, from him. You know, he stuck by me through the worst of everything. And I truly do not believe we'd be where we are at right now without him. So he was, you know, we have a Hispanic culture in our company, and he runs the teams. And so I'm just a white female trying to run a construction and restoration company. And if I didn't have his respect and his support, it would be much more difficult. And so the combination of him and I and how well we work together and the dynamics within the company, we were able to bring women and men into our field. And that's one of the things too, is that I'm one of the few restoration companies in my area, if not only, that have female technicians out there doing the same work as the men is doing.
What percentage, if you track this, what percentage of the decision makers, you know, you just referred to this person in the high-end district who's a guy, what percentage of the people that you deal with are women? They're going to make the decision to hire Bravo or not?
I would say about 70% of our consumers are the females, the wives that are dealing with that. But we still have a strong men consumer as well. It's hard to say if it goes in fluctuations because during COVID, a lot more men were our direct point of contact than the women were. And so it just really depends.
Let's jump into that. So 2016, you buy it. Having a real tough time. Fires come in 2017, kind of towards the end of 2017. It really starts turning around for you, and you're going gangbusters. Then all of a sudden, you've got another curveball, and everybody did. So you have a curveball called COVID. What initially did that do? And you're in a state, unlike me in North Dakota, where we dealt with COVID for about 90 days, and for all practical purposes, and kind of moved on. That's kind of an exaggeration. But let's just say 3 months.
Yeah.
You were much different. What did you do?
I dealt with it the whole time. I actually, you know, took a combination of things. So when it happened, I was like, I had that fear again. I was like, oh my God, this can end my company. Like, what am I going to do? I have all these staff members. Like, I didn't know enough. In my industry, other fellow restoration people were advertising that they can clean for it. And they were selling services to clean for COVID. And then everyone's like telling me, like, are you going to do that? And I was like, my gut, everything I do in life is my gut. My gut was telling me, I don't know enough about this virus to confidently tell clients, I can get rid of COVID from your facility. Like, how could I put myself out there? So I was one of the few restoration companies that didn't do it because I didn't feel comfortable with it. And it ended up working out so good for us because so many people got sued over there and just so many like not, it was just unethical in my opinion, but it is neither here nor there. But, you know, we never shut down. I felt sorry for myself as a business owner, like that I have to deal with this. I'm not going to lie. I had my moment of like, what the hell am I going to do? I have all the staff members, you know, all of this. But then I came up with a game plan. I did my research. I talked to my fellow restoration companies, talked to lawyers. We came up, we already have, when we go out to people's homes, we're really already dealing with mold and asbestos and contaminants. So we're already prepared to be wearing masks and gloves. Like that's already part of our process. So that didn't change much. I had my staff, my office staff go work remote for maybe a month. And then I saw the negative impact it was having on our culture. And so I brought everybody back and I just established, stay 6 feet away from each other, wash your hands, you know, common sense stuff. And then I was very calm about it. I wasn't like, everybody be afraid of COVID. Like, oh my God, you know, we're going to shut down or anything like that. I just stayed cool, calm and collect. I said, if we have a case or if you're not feeling good, you know, you have to go get tested and don't come to work. And just very factual. I kept the emotion out of it. And I was supportive. And even when my staff were working from home, I came to the office every single day because I saw field technicians that had to go to people's homes. So I still was here as a support for them. Out of the 23, 24 employees that we had during this year, we had one positive case. And that was right at the beginning. And I feel like because of all the combination of all of that and staying together, like I didn't stop. We still, you know, did stuff. We still had to keep going. And so, yeah, very lucky.
Let me ask you this. Maybe this is a stupid question, but you're in Sonoma County that had, even before 2017, history of fires, and then 2017, the big fires, and you're still having them. Were you classified as an essential business? Because if you weren't allowed to work, what would they have done?
Yeah, no, we were still classified as essential business.
Okay,
because people were still having water damage inside their homes. So here is another factor: is you have all these people going back and staying inside their houses more than ever before. They had toilet overflows, pipe bursts. I mean, and it's unhealthy. Excuse me. It's unhealthy for people to be living in those environments where you're having contaminants in the air and more people breathing, less ventilation. I mean, they were not healthy environments. And so we were still going out to people's homes, dealing with water, dealing with mold, sewage, all kinds of stuff. So we were very fortunate. We were considered an essential. We never had a shutdown. Our construction part in Marin County, we weren't allowed to work construction for like 2 weeks. But other than that, we were able to work. We had homeowners who still wanted us to come inside their houses. We respected everybody. You know, if a homeowner didn't feel comfortable, we wouldn't, you know, have them do that.
Back up. I need to go back to the servant's heart part of your personality. Where along the timeline from when you were an employee at the first company or when you became an employee at Bravo or when you bought it, where along that timeline did you make the decision, I need to invest in the community, be involved in these organizations in terms of my time or even financial resources? Where did that happen and where did you pick up on that that's a good idea, which it is?
Honestly, it's hard to say because like, part of it, I'm, you know how we care, like there's people who care about the elderly, the kids and animals. And I've always been really big about kids because of my childhood and everything like that. And I'm very protective. So it's like, what can I do to make children's our future? Because these are our future leaders. These are our future employees. This is our future. How can I help and be a positive impact on them and make that best situation? So a lot of my community involvement surrounds children and what can I do? Like I've coached, you know, as many teams, I coach all my kids' teams. I help out at their school and any schools, you know, any kid related things. I give back with Letitia Hinkey's Lime Foundation with the trays. I mean, that's our future, like people working on their hands. I just really want to help. I'm thinking like ahead, right? Like I'm thinking, how are we going to set up this world to be a little bit of a better place for the future? Because I don't feel like that same thought happened when we were kids. We weren't the priority back then. And so now we have a lot of entitlement and people not wanting to work and just, I mean, we have a lot of intelligent people too, but it's just, I don't know. So my community involvement really tails into how can I help our future kids and how can I, you know, how do I help our future leaders?
The Lime Foundation, you're involved in that. Do you, at your company, at Bravo, do you end up having interns work with you from the Lime Foundation from time to time?
Yes. I've had a couple of students come and work for me. I have one right now that celebrated his year anniversary. We hired him a week before he turned 18 years old. His name is Keon. Every client loves him. Like, he gets the most compliments. He's the sweetest, hardworking. He's our baby. We call him our baby, which is super not, you know, HR allowed, but we don't care. We're a family. He's the baby of our company, and he works so hard, and everything he learned from the foundation, like, he just applies it. And if we could have 10 more Keons, I'd be set for life. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
How much of your business in terms of percentage is restoration and then construction? Or is it kind of the same thing?
Well, our restoration aspect is like the emergency services, so the mold, water, fire. We're about 55 to 60% emergency services and 40% construction.
And did you have a background in that at the previous company, or is that primarily the emergency services restoration stuff?
I had a background in both construction and emergency services. Emergency services is my favorite, and it comes to the servant's heart because it's like we get to be the hero. We're coming out and saving the day and taking care of clients, and they love us, and everything's perfect because we came out there and saved their property. Then the construction is just, it's so hard finding good quality people to put everything back, doing it within a timeline, doing it based off the budget. You know, my overhead is high, and it's high because I take care of my staff. Like, I throw parties. I'm motivated by money just so I can give more back. And so, like, I don't take a lot from my company for myself because I don't care. Like, I'm happy. I'm fine. I'm like, how can I take care of other people? And so, so my overhead is high. So it makes our costs go up, but because everybody's so happy and everybody just like wants to be here, like what we get back to our clients is far exceeds what our competitors are doing. Like, everybody generally, we don't have no shows. We don't have people calling in all the time. Like, people genuinely want to be here and help our clients. They care about them. And then on the same token, if we have clients that are rude or disrespectful to any of our staff members, Mama Bear kicks in so quickly. I have absolutely no tolerance for that. And I don't even care. Like I want to help clients, but if they're rude or disrespectful to my staff, I will pull us off the job, pull us off their home. I don't care what size it is. Like, no tolerance for disrespect. So I hold, you know.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. In doing research on you, I read about your interview process, because long story short is that good people like to stay at Bravo. The people that aren't fitting into the culture, they kind of pretty much leave on their own because of the culture that exists. And in that interview, you talk about how you involve other team leaders in that interview process before they ever get to you. And I think it was also in that same article where it's a family, not just a team, it's a family. Where did you learn the value of having your culture set up that way, which I applaud you, by the way? It's very, very important.
I think it's more just like what I wanted as an employee. Like, I, you know, what I feel like is right. Like, I'm really big about justice. I can't stand when things are not fair, or, oh, well, that's just how it is because that's what it is. And so, I don't know. I just want it to make it, like, if I'm expecting you to bust ass, excuse my language, and go into crawl spaces and suck out sewage or be here for 12 hours a day because we have fires coming in, I want to make this the best experience possible. And I also believe in like your coworkers, you know, everybody here has to jive. Like no one here has the exact same personality. We're all different. We all like different music. We all do different things in our personal lives, but we all have the same core values. And I can't alone decide if that person has all of our core values. I need my team. Like I need them to invest in and want that teammate to be, because they're going to want their success. No one here, no one, every time a new person comes in here, every single person that works here wants them to be just as successful as them. There's no animosity. There's no drama. There's no fighting for positions. Before we even hire, we like talk to everybody like, hey, we're hiring for this. Does anybody want it? You know, or we think, and there's been plenty of times too, where we've hired for a position and we interviewed a candidate and we're like, oh, they are not going to work for that position. But holy crap, do we want them in our culture? And we find a position for them. Maria, she's my little story, but she interviewed for a coordinator position and her personality, her background, everything just felt right, but not for that position. And so we created a social media role for her and we're like, okay, we're going to have to figure out how to keep her busy and like, let's give her other stuff. This girl is so busy right now. A year later, like she's developed her own position and she owns it. And she's so empowered, and just watching her growth from that point to here is just, it's just in awe of her. So, yeah.
Oh, good for you. That reminds me of a person that I have just the most respect for, CEO of a company I'm very familiar with. He had a history of saying, gosh, I just met that Nicole today. I do not have a spot for her today, maybe not for the next 2 years, maybe even three. But the last thing I want to do is 3 years from now is compete against her. So I'm going to find a way to make sure we have her now. Oh, and by the way, with regards to your language, you don't have to apologize for English. And people use the word bust on my show all the time. You can say whatever you want. So speaking of culture and how that has served you and your clients well, you were the recipient of the 2020 Ladder Award. Explain for Mike Seminary and friends, listeners and followers, exactly what that means, because that's a big deal.
Thank you. It was just basically those entrepreneurial leaders under the age of 35 who are making a name for the industry and who are kind of fighting against the glass ceiling, going above and beyond, and are just are doing things outside of the playbook. And so I was the first recipient of that award, and it was very exciting and cool. To be fully honest, I've never won anything before. And so that was like my first time winning anything ever. And it was so cool. And I'm very proud of myself on that. But it's hard to like ever take. Thank you. It's hard to take credit though, because like I've said, I would not be where I'm at without my team. Like so many people, even like my office manager, she's pregnant right now and she's due September 2nd. And I remember, because of such my bad experience with my first pregnancy working in this industry, I remember being so afraid of what's going to happen when I have my first pregnant employee. Like, am I going to mess this up? Am I going to make her like hate her as much as I hated my company when I was pregnant? Because they treated me so bad, so, so bad. And she's just, it's been the best experience ever. Like she's our Bravo, she's having our first Bravo baby. And, her name's Ashley, and I'm just like, I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of the company as a whole, like how we're handling this like new milestone as a company. And it's just really exciting that like my doubts and how they're not real. And because I have a great team and as a team, we establish even more teammates, and I don't know. It's just really cool.
I like that first Bravo baby.
Bravo baby. Yeah.
It's got a nice ring to it.
It does. I'm trying to get her to put a Bravo name in his name, but she's not having it. So
this is now when I ask this question, this isn't political. This is more about kind of the California culture and liability. Having relatives that live in California, I'm fairly familiar with this. Liability is handled a little differently in California. You can get sued for so many things, and it happens all the time. How does liability impact your company? And in terms of the insurance you have to carry, are the premiums pretty significant part of your day-to-day operations?
I mean, basically, California is set up so that you cannot be a small business owner. We're fighting against it all the time, especially a contractor. So I have all of the insurance. Like, I even have employment, even though I treat my employees fantastic and I love them, I still have employee liability insurance for in the event I get sued. And I have been sued by an employee before. And because I have that insurance, it didn't hurt our company. So it's, you know, the day to day, it's just part of my overhead. I expect to pay, I think I pay all my premiums, all my insurance, it's like around $75,000 a year just in insurance. And then contractor state license, you know, to have a contractor's license in the state of California. And if I were to ever follow every single line rule, I couldn't even do business. And so having our culture, like having the right people who care about our license, who respect the rules that we have to follow and is really huge, because just even being a contractor, something one of my staff members does, I could get arrested for. Like, truly, my life can be ripped away from me because of a staff member. And I'm actually dealing with a similar situation right now from two past employees that no longer work here that put my license on the line. And it's just something that you deal with, and you do your best to find the right people and have the right processes in place. And we're constantly changing processes to just improve. Like, how do we give our clients the best protection for them too? Like, I never want to be a contractor that, you know, screws over anybody. And so it's constantly staying up to date with the new laws, new regulations, documentation is everything. So yeah, when we bring people into our culture, having that respect for that is a huge component too.
Well, I sure hope, and I'm going to say this more as a person that has been involved in economic development at a variety of levels, even at a statewide. I served the governor on a foundation board, been involved in chamber work. What I did before I retired in the engineering industry was all about business development, economic development. California is a remarkable state. Again, I have relatives that live there, love to visit. I hope they start kind of getting that. I learned this from a person. Be careful when you mine the miners, because when you mine the miners, eventually they're going to walk out of the mine and say, "I'm going to go do something else." And the backbone of our country are small business entrepreneurs. That. Period. It is the backbone of our country. And if we overburden them with silly rules and regulations, confiscatory fees and taxes, and overburden them, eventually going to say, you know what, I'm going to go do something else. Some of them walk away and say, I'm going to go work for the government. And here I work for the government. I'm here to help you. Not true.
No.
Well,
you're spot on. And I say that all the time. It's like, especially in the state of California, like, right now with fires and how COVID was handled, there's so many people leaving our state right now. And I'm like, they're making it harder and harder and harder for small businesses to survive. And it's like, we are the backbone, like you said. And how is this going to happen if they keep pushing us out? And so, but I'm also a fight the man type of a person, that the feminist in me, though I'm not, a little bit of feminist in me just wants to prove a point, prove that, yes, you can push us down as much as you want, but we can fight through it. And you can do business in California. It just takes, you know, extra work.
I'm going to ask you a question. Imagine you have a magic wand and you get to wave it over the heads of young business owners that are dealing with or potentially might deal with the very same challenges that you did when you made the decision to go out and get a second mortgage and tell your husband later to buy the company that also had a toxic culture, and there was brand damage and significant financial pressures. What's the one thing you'd want them to know or to hear from you?
I'll start off by saying this, that if I had to go back and redo it, I would redo it almost exactly the same. There is nothing, because of everything I went through, it gave me experience and it gave me lessons. Everything in life is a lesson or a blessing. And so I would not change a single thing I went through because I want to be where I'm at and who I am and how I think. So my magic wand would be go with your gut. Always trust your gut. And that is how I got as far as I got. And if I didn't trust my gut, I wouldn't be where I'm at. And I would have given up, or I would have sold the company, or I would have found a way out, or I would have allowed the naysayers and the dream takers. I would have let the noise consume me. And your gut is everything. It's all you got. It's your gut.
Yeah, choices and consequences. And you made a choice, and the consequences were tough at first, but it sure proved out, didn't it? That's because of you. This has nothing to do with where my next question. Have you ever been to North Dakota?
I have not.
If you visit, and there's a lot of reason. There are a lot of reasons to visit North Dakota as a family. Medora, for example, incredibly beautiful part of the state, the country, for example. They have the Medora musical, which is some of the best family entertainment you'll ever find. The only word of caution is you might not want to come here January or February. There are times I run where it's 30 below, and you I don't know if you would like that coming from Sonoma County. No. Just so you know.
Oh, I'm a California brat. Though I talk what I say, I will never move from California. I love my warm weather. I have a disease called Raynaud's. So if I get super cold, my fingers turn. Yeah.
Yes.
And so I can't live there. No. No, thank you.
The people who don't, that both Deb, my wife and I, we both have it.
It's so terrible.
And just so you know. Yeah. So when I go out and run, what I have to do, because it doesn't have to be real cold for it to happen. Just all of a sudden it's like temperature change.
100%.
All of a sudden your fingers and toes,
and
right?
Numb. And you're like, and it's so painful. And you're like, I have frostbite. I'm going to die right now. Super dramatic, of course.
So I have to put these, I put these little heaters in my big winter gloves, and then I put another glove on before I put it into the big winter glove with the heaters on. So, second question, same kind of a magic wand. And now you're going to wave it over the heads of young women and ladies exploring the opportunities the trades have to offer them. What's the one thing you want them to know?
Do it. 100%. Right now, like I told you earlier, we only had 4 women in my company when I bought it. Right now, we have 11 or 12. We are more women than men in my restoration and construction company. I am lost of words how proud I am of every single female. And when I started this industry, I was deemed a receptionist or a marketing person, and that was all I was allowed to be. And the fact that we have women in estimating roles, project manager roles, field owner, like every role there is, a woman can do. And so any women out there that want to try something different or go out of their comfort zone, don't come to the trades. Like, it's so rewarding on so many different levels. You like really get to own your pride, and you don't have to be chauvinist about it. You don't have to be, like, we have no drama in our staff. We don't have any women that are like, oh, you know, women are better than men. Like, we all have our equal parts, but holy crap, it's so rewarding. And I wish that every woman would at least give it a shot.
What do you do for total relaxation? When you're shutting down, what is it you do?
That's something I'm working on, is my work-life balance. I definitely struggle with that. I do enjoy, I play co-ed softball with my husband. I really enjoy coaching my kids. My youngest, I usually coach his soccer team, and this last year I coached his baseball team. I like, you know, doing activities. We're very competitive. Like, any opportunity we can compete. I mean, we compete over who says thank you for dinner first. I mean, so those, you know, those moments where we get to have, where I kind of don't have to think about work and I can just enjoy being a wife or a mother. Or myself too, when I work out, I love it. I feel the best when I have my work-life balance. And so there's nothing specific that I do. I like to do everything. I'm big about experiences too. Like, if I love vacationing, and I'll go ziplining, skydiving, I get tattoos. I want to experience life as much and often as possible. So,
what's the best way for our listeners and followers, Mike Seminary friends, to learn more about you and follow you and not stalk you? But what's the best way for them to know more about Bravo Construction and Restoration?
Yeah, they can check out my personal pages are public because I'm, you know, don't care. And I share my kids and all my fun activities with the kids and the work. But you can check us on the website, bravorestoration.com. We have an Instagram, a Facebook for our company pages. Which I highly recommend everybody following at Bravo_Restoration and our Facebook Bravo Restoration Construction. We post fun videos. We do a lot of giveaways. We're just fun. We're a young, energetic entrepreneur group of people who just enjoy what they do. And so follow us on social media. That's where everything's at these days.
Last thing you want people to know about you, Nicole?
Ooh, that you already don't have. I would just say that like, it looks like you make me sound so cool, and I wish you could just write my biography. Like, it took a lot of hard work, and it was not easy, and I still have my insecurities. Like, I still half the time have no idea what the heck I'm doing. I just would say that it's not easy, and I wouldn't be where I'm at without you. I didn't do this individually, and
Well, thanks so much for joining me. You were just a wonderful person to interview. I learned a lot, and I'm a fan.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network? Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.